Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we are being joined by
Johnny Kay, director of The Killer of Grassy Ridge.
And it's a new short film that you can stream it now on YouTube, but I know it's coming to, it'll be up on Amazon Prime sometime in the next couple of days. Congrats on the film. And yeah, tell us, let's start with that. What's the deal with getting it on Amazon?
Yeah, well, thanks a lot for having me on. It's huge. I've listened to WTOP for many, many years. So to come on here and be able to do the interview is a pretty big honor for me. Yeah, I mean, with Amazon, it's simply a matter of, coming up with a good film that Amazon likes and appreciates. And then you got to go through the upload process. And, the captioning is kind of what held me up. You got to have all the captions on there for the ADA, the disability stuff, the compliance, and that was kind of a roadblock for us to get it up on Amazon, but it's been on YouTube for a few months. And the whole idea behind the film, it's my very first film. So I'm learning every step of the way through the process, but I just wanted to challenge myself to see if I can make a movie in 60 days. And the end result is The Killer of Grassy Ridge. It took me 62 days to make it. I gave myself a couple days leeway, but we were able to get the movie put together, put out there. And what I did not expect is all the reception that we've gotten all across the world. That's the part I never saw coming. So it's been a great ride.
You mentioned the reception you received. What has that been? Has it been playing in any festivals?
Yeah, it's been in a few. We've been really blessed. We've been really lucky. When we first made the film, I just wanted to see if I could do it as a personal challenge. Goal one was to make a film. Goal two was to make a good film that I'm proud of. And then lo and behold, we started getting picked up by all these festivals. And I think as of now, we're about 7 months into this and we're in almost 40 festivals on 6 continents. I've actually looked to see if there's a film festival in Antarctica, just so I could say we've been in 7 continents, but I've not had luck with that yet. But yeah, it's a huge blessing. Never saw the festival circuit coming like this. I didn't even think that would be an option for a debut film. And the fact that we're winning some of these, it's one thing to get your debut film into a festival. It's another thing to get nominated for things like, best horror film and best U.S. short and best cinematography. Those are things that, I never would have dreamed would go to a first-time filmmaker. And then the icing on the cake is we're winning some of these things. We've got 10 wins right now across the world. So pretty humbling.
Yeah, it's cool getting to see you flash all those laurels up on, your trailers and your, posters and stuff. But I think the key to the whole film festival circuit is that, you kind of kept it really simple. It's 2 actors, 1 location. It doesn't have to be some intricate, overly complex, splashy kind of a thing. I think you kind of nailed the secret to festivals. I mean, is that sort of been your experience? Is that, when you set out to do it, did you want to kind of keep it a self-contained sort of thing that was manageable to pull off, but also could be powerful in its simplicity?
Yeah, absolutely. Everything was driven by our restrictions and our limitations, which, sometimes that's, I think, when the best art, that's where the best art comes from, is when you're very limited with what you have to work with. And in my case, I was just tired of making excuses. I'd been thinking about making my first film for years, and I kept giving myself excuses that either my camera wasn't good enough, I was going to wait till I got a new camera to make my first movie, or I didn't know the right people, or I wasn't connected with the right crew. It was, if you allow yourself to make excuses, you'll never get anything done. And last year, I got inspired actually by hearing about something called the 48-Hour Film Project, which is, I'm not sure if you know about it, but that's a contest where you have 48 hours to make a film, a short film from start to finish. And it's a contest you compete against other teams. And I'm a notorious procrastinator. So when I heard about the 48s, that sounded right up my alley. It sounded like something I could do, because if you procrastinate on that, you're done. You don't have a movie. And I thought, well, I'm not going to give myself 48 hours. I'm going to give myself 60 days. And at the end of that period, I will either have a movie or I will not. And if it's terrible, I never have to show it to anybody. And that's just kind of how everything started. And it was driven out of our restrictions and our limitations. I wanted to be realistic through the whole process. The horror genre, I think, was kind of dictated by our budget, because I knew we could go out into the woods and film a self-contained story convincingly without having to have a lot of expensive extras and a huge crew and a lot of, highly trained cast. I knew we could go out and pull something off, and I just never expected it to reach the levels that it has.
Now, we've been talking, both of us, obviously you made the film and I've watched it, so we're kind of talking, assuming everyone knows it, but let's back up a second. Of course, most people listening to this have no idea what it is. Give them the quick premise, you know, where it's set and who the characters are.
Yeah, sure. It'll be really quick because it's, as you mentioned, it's kind of a to the point, simple story. The Killer of Grassy Ridge is it's a horror film, and it's a 9-minute short film, and it is about a killer stalking the Shenandoah Valley. And as you mentioned before, we have two actors in the film, played by Michael Stumbo and Heather Stone. Heather is right here in Arlington, and Michael is out in Winchester. And we shot the film in the Shenandoah Valley between Front Royal and Luray, Virginia. And then I did a couple of additional pickup shots of the mountains down in where I come from in East Tennessee, Carter County, East Tennessee. And it's a very, I won't say too much without spoiling anything, but it's a interesting take on what happens when two strangers meet each other out in the desolate Shenandoah Valley.
Yeah, for sure. And I just, I appreciate how, you know, patient and yet economical it is at the same time. So it's a tight, you know, tight package, self-contained, like you're saying, but also the shots do breathe a little in the beginning. You get those nice opening shots of, you know, the woods and the Shenandoah Valley looking out over the mountains. And tell me about the key to sort of visual storytelling, because, you know, it's not very dialogue heavy. You know, you get some, you know, chatter over a little radio speaker or whatever intercom thing that they have out in the woods. But other than that, it's pretty much, you know, it's just your camera, your storyboard, painting a picture. And of course, as the director, you can reveal to us what you think those images are, flip it or not, whatever, you know what I mean? Like you're in ultimate control. That's the power of cinema. But talk about how visual storytelling is what really is the power of this particular, you know, film.
Yeah. Thanks for saying the nice words. Yeah. I always had the idea of starting the film off as big as I possibly could, which in the movie, it's represented by the big shot of the mountains. You know, we have the opening wide vista shot of the mountains. And again, that was filmed in Carter County back home, East Tennessee, near Roan Mountain. And we filmed that. I wanted the movie to start off as big as it possibly could. And then I wanted the film to end in a small room with only one character. So I kind of wanted to, you know, even though it's only a 9-minute short, I wanted to make it as dynamic as I could. Between the big mountains versus one character sitting alone in a tiny room in a cabin, which we had rented over the weekend. And visual storytelling wise, I wanted it to be a little, unnerving, and I wanted it to, you know, keep people on edge a little bit. And they didn't know what was coming next. I kind of took a page out of the Jaws book, which is, you know, the shark was at its scariest when you couldn't see it. You know, when you could see the shark, it was suddenly a little scarier. Or when you could say it wasn't as scary, I should say. But with Killer of Grassy Ridge, I really wanted that unnerving feeling. And I also wanted it to take place in a setting that everyone was kind of familiar with. You know, we've not all been in Victorian mansions or, you know, haunted caves or anything like that. But everyone at some point in their lives has taken a walk through the woods, regardless of where those woods are. And I wanted something that everyone could kind of relate to. That feeling when you're in the woods by yourself and your mind starts playing tricks on you and things are going around you that you're not quite sure what is happening. So all of that, I kind of wanted to play with, and I got to give a shout out to the guys who did the music for our film. We actually won best score at Sandgrounder Film Fest in the UK. But Mattia Capelli, Doug Maxwell, and a group called ESN Productions did the music for our film. And I hear it a lot from friends and from some critics that the music kind of acts as the third character. So we had those visuals and then we put the music on top of it, and I'm very happy with the results.
Oh, absolutely. As you should be. Tell me a little more of the, you know, you're starting to mention the crew a little bit. Tell me a bit about like the logistics, like, you know, if you don't mind saying, like, what kind of budget were we working with? What camera were you shooting on? You know, how long was the shooting schedule? All that kind of stuff.
Sure. Yeah. The easiest way that I describe our budget is if Michael Stumbo, my lead actor, had asked for extra mayonnaise on his sandwich, it would have destroyed our budget. it would have been over. No, we, funny story. I think we ended up shooting the film for about $500. On IMDb, I don't even think they let you select $500 as an option for your budget. I think the lowest number you can put on IMDb is $1,000, and that's because no one in their right mind would try to make a film for under $1,000. That's just insane.
Yeah, but you proved it could be done. And some of the best stuff, you don't need all the bells and whistles, you know?
You know, I agree. And that's kind of the point of why I made this whole movie, because I've got a lot of friends as well who were in the same position I was a year ago saying, oh, I would love to make a movie, but I'm being held back by, and then they just start inserting the excuses. And, you know, shoot, the phones that people have in their pockets right now are more powerful than any video camera that existed 20 years ago, you know, and it kind of got to a point with me where I decided I'm just going to go make a movie using exactly what I have on hand. And to your question about my camera, it was I shot the whole thing on a Nikon D3300, which is a kind of an entry-level DSLR. It's probably about a $400 camera. I don't include that in the budget because I'd owned the camera for 5 years probably before we shot the film. But yeah, I shot it on that. I picked up a 50 prime lens for some of the close-up and tight shots, which I actually really ended up loving and probably overused it. The entire movie is, with the exception of the shot of the mountains, the entire movie is nothing but tight shots. But no lights at all. I took a page from Emmanuel Lubezki's work in The Revenant, which is one of my favorite films of the last few years. And I became obsessed with the idea of shooting a movie with zero artificial light sources, because I'm kind of a run and gun guerrilla filmmaker. That's the way I like to do it. I like to not be tethered to tripods and lights and have, you know, 1 hour breakdowns in between each setup. I don't like that. I like to run and gun. And when I found out that they filmed The Revenant out in the woods, granted, I'm not comparing my film to that film, but when I found out they filmed that, that film with zero artificial light sources, it was basically all lit by natural light and by firelight. I thought, what a great tool for a guerrilla filmmaker. You know, you don't have to worry about artificial lighting, which to me, it seemed a little disingenuous to drag a bunch of lights out into the woods anyway. And as it happened, of course, we ended up shooting on probably the shortest day of the year. Our big day of filming was late November, and it seems like we had about 6 hours of daylight, and it was just a absolute race against the clock to get everything in. And toward the end of the film, exterior wise, you can see some of the shots got pretty dark on me. I was using reflectors to try to bounce around the last of the sun, but we were losing the battle against Mother Nature on that one. But the crew came together. We had a very skeleton crew. We probably only had no more than 6 or 7 folks out in the woods on our biggest day. And it was all hands on deck. It was everybody doing everything. Had a guy helping with still photography, and he was also helping with some of the limited amount of blood and gore that we had in the film. There's not a ton, but we had some. And he was doing a lot of the props handling. Actually, Heather, our lead actress, she also jumped in and helped out with some hair and makeup and just trying to, you know, make sure the film looked like we wanted to. But it was all hands on deck. And when it's a independent film, guerrilla style filmmaking, you know, a lot of people can relate to that. You're wearing multiple hats.
For sure. So how many days total did you actually shoot it?
It was shot over the course of a month. And I want to say we had probably 4 separate days of filming. We had one big day, which is the big day where both our actors were in. And then I had a lot of solo scenes just with Heather at the lake. And then another character at the cabin by the firelight. And then we had, I went back for some pickup shots for the mountain vista shot. So it was probably shot over the course of 4 different days.
Nice. And you mentioned, you know, Emmanuel Lubezki, cinematographer for, you know, Alejandro Iñárritu on The Revenant. Obviously that's the one that most closely resembles your film, but I mean, come on, Lubezki too. I mean, Children of Men and Gravity and Birdman. I mean, the guy's a legend already. But anyway, so you mentioned him. Any other inspirations, or, you know, who are your filmmaking idols, if I can word it that way?
Yeah, sure. I mean, there's so many, but the two that are always going to be the first out of my mouth are John Carpenter and Steven Spielberg. Just, you know, for very different reasons as well. You know, Carpenter, when you look back at what he was doing in the late 70s, you know, right when he was kind of making all those phenomenal films, Halloween and his version of The Thing, and, you know, The Fog was in there, and Escape from New York, and just all of his kind of late 70s, early 80s work, and a few of his later ones, he was doing a lot with very little, you know. Yeah. And I relate to that because, you know, I have very little, and I'm interested in challenging myself to make the best product I can under the restrictions and limitations I have. I enjoy that challenge. And when you look back on how, you know, Halloween was filmed, the original Halloween, I mean, it's just amazing. That was basically a guerrilla film that had some brilliant ideas in it with the Steadicam. It was kind of the, you know, one of the pilot films to really use the Steadicam, and the entire opening sequence of that film is just brilliant. So John Carpenter, You know, I've been a huge Carpenter fan all my life. Kind of working in under a different set of budgetary restrictions as Steven Spielberg. And that's just because, you know, I'm a child of the 80s. I was the target audience for, you know, films like E.T. and Raiders of the Lost Ark. Jaws is actually my favorite film of all time. So if I had to name two, I mean, there's so many filmmakers I look up to, but if I had to name two, it's going to be John Carpenter and Spielberg all day.
I love it. Yeah, I mean, you're right. It's such a great point about how Carpenter did so much with so little. And yeah, I mean, I think the Steadicam might have been, I think they tested it going up the Rocky steps. I think that Bound for Glory, a couple others maybe in like 76. But yeah, Halloween was right after that. It's in 78. And Carpenter, I mean, yeah, it's such a great point that you pointed out how he did so much with so little. And obviously, Spielberg sort of the other end of that, where he had all the big tools. But if you look at his filmmaking in Jaws, I mean, other than the big shark stuff, like you're saying, the shark didn't work. And the moments that work the best are the ones where it's just visual storytelling or music, like in your movie, you know, that John Williams score, it's the same as the Killer of Grassy Ridge, the music, or even Halloween, the music helps drive it, music and visual storytelling. And you're the one, you just did it so well on this film. So congrats, man.
Thank you, man. Thanks for the kind words. Really appreciate that.
Is there anything else? I'm trying to think. Tell us a little bit more about yourself. You know, where did you grow up? Cause I like having, you know, on WTOP, you like having the local angle, local hero, you know, hometown hero makes it big kind of an angle. So where did you grow up?
Yeah, sure. I appreciate it. No, I grew up in East Tennessee. I was born in a town called Kingsport, which is near Bristol, and grew up there, lived there for the first 23 years of my life or so. And then I moved to Alexandria, Virginia, where I still am. And I've been kind of in and out, been overseas a few times since then. But for the most part, I've lived in Northern Virginia area for 17 years. And yeah, when the idea came up to film this movie, I already knew the locations that I wanted. We filmed on a friend's property out in Front Royal, and it just had the look that I needed. And then of course I knew I wanted those opening beautiful mountains. And as much as I love the Shenandoah Valley and Skyline Drive, permits aside, because filming permits can be tough over there. And also we were filming in November, December, so some of those roads were actually closed down for ice. And as much as I wanted those mountains in my film, I thought, you know, I'm from East Tennessee. I know exactly where I can go get some big, beautiful mountains. And I had to go back home over Christmas break last year. And that's when I went up to near Roan Mountain and filmed some of our mountain shots there. But yeah, I'm an East Tennessean, but a Northern Virginian since 2003 or so.
Nice. And so where, it's fun. Yeah. My wife and I we did a road trip down that whole long stretch of Virginia into Tennessee. So I know exactly where you're talking about, man, down in the Smokies. So that's a cool area to grow up and you captured, the Shenandoah well up here too. What's next for you?
Thanks for asking. It's every filmmaker's favorite question. We are,
you're like, let me promote this one first, man.
That's right. it's a good thing you don't have me on video. I've got my Red Eagle One shirt on and my Red Eagle One hat on. It's like Spaceballs promotional materials over here.
Well, may the shorts be with you, man.
Yeah, that's right. Thanks. Yeah, we're actually right smack dab in the middle of production for my next film now. It's called Red Eagle One. It will also be a short film. It's not a horror film. I've now kind of set some expectations among some friends of mine. Everybody thinks I'm only going to do horror films now, which is not the case. But yeah, I'm working on a film called Red Eagle One. Our original film that we had scheduled to shoot this year got postponed because of 2020. What more do I need to say?
Yep, say no more.
Yeah, and so in April or May of this year, we sat around and thought, you know, what if we wrote a film specifically to be shot under lockdown conditions? In other words, what if we wrote something that could be shot with a socially distant cast and crew, a skeleton crew, no more typically than two actors ever working together in one scene, and just not have a bunch of people around, and we do it safely and smartly? It goes back to what I was talking about before, about some of the, in my opinion, the best art comes from working under restrictions and limitations. And I thought, what if we wrote a film specifically to be shot during the great coronavirus lockdown of 2020? And the subject matter has nothing to do with the pandemic, but that's just the hand we were dealt. So the idea for Red Eagle One was born. And the whole concept behind the film is when we look at the first human beings who will probably ever set foot on Mars, those people are probably just kids today. They're probably 10 years old or 12 years old.
Right.
And, you know, when you start thinking about that, who are these kids? Are they your kids? Are they your neighbor's kids? Do they go to school with your kids? I mean, they belong to somebody. And these are going to be the kids that, you know, eventually go on to undertake mankind's greatest achievement, which will be when we set foot on Mars. So the idea, you know, just kind of popped into my head. I want to take a look at who those kids are now. What influences are they surrounded by? Do they have people encouraging them? Do they have people telling them that, you know, this is just a silly phase. You need to grow out of this and do something different. Because that's what we say to kids when they're doing something strange, right? Oh, this is just a phase. You'll grow out of it. And the idea behind Red Eagle One is, what if the kid doesn't grow out of it and ends up becoming one of the first human beings to ever set foot on Mars? So long story short, we've converted the garage into a spaceship. And we're right smack dab in the middle. We started filming in June. Actually, we've got some virtual performances, which is kind of a first for me, trying to do some direction over a couple hundred miles or more. And we've been shooting off and on all summer, pretty much every weekend. We actually have this weekend off, which I'm looking forward to. And I'm expecting production to wrap on that by the end of September. We'll hopefully get a trailer out shortly after that. And then Red Eagle One will be released later in 2020.
Awesome. Yeah, I love the concept. You know, it's good that those kids didn't grow out of it. Maybe it was just a phase. I'm glad they don't grow out of it, because it's probably the very thing that made people look at them and say, "Ooh, what's wrong with them?" It's probably the very thing that makes them, you know, the type of people that will achieve going to Mars. So I love that concept. And I'm glad you didn't grow out of the phase of, you know, wanting to become a filmmaker, sir, because you did a heck of a a first film there with Killer of Grassy Ridge. So everybody check it out. It's on YouTube now. Coming to Amazon in the next couple of days. So, hey, Johnny K, this was great. I really appreciate it. And yeah, be proud, man. This is good stuff. Keep it up.
Thanks so much. Hey, I really appreciate the time. This was an honor.
All right. Talk to you later.